Yeah, okay, so we're still avoiding the Loewe's case. But take a look at this quick point in the Gadatah here. On the top of Yudal Ramalach Megillah. So, the Gemara is like this. Amar Rebbe Abba. Marshal Dachash Verosh V'Hanuman L'maha David Domer. Right, you see this?
Yeah.
So, Achashverosh and Haman, what do they like? Okay. L'shnei b'nei Adam. So Rashi says, first of all, he says, Klomer, yesh lomo b'achashverosh af b'dayto hoi l'ashmina. The lesson of this Gadata, of this Chazal, is that you shouldn't think Achashverosh was just, disinterested and just let Haman do what he wanted to do. Because right, that's the way the story seems. Seems like, you know, whatever. Achashverosh was a party guy, and Haman was the guy who really hated the Jews. But Achashverosh says, okay, if you want to do this, go ahead. I don't really care. Right? Gemara saying no. Achashverosh also really wanted to destroy the Jews. So what was it like? It was like two people. Okay, so don't say Avi. There's two people. Echad hayelo tel besoch sadeo. One guy had a mound in his field. Echad hayelo choretz besoch sadeo. And one guy had a ditch in his field. The Baal Choretz said, I wish someone would give me some dirt. I'll pay somebody for dirt. And the guy with the mound said, I would pay somebody to use their ditch to fill up to get rid of my dirt. Okay, so who's who? That's the first question. So one of them is like a guy with a mound on his field. And the other one is a guy with a ditch in his field. And they each, prior to meeting each other, they each had hoped to come across somebody who could remedy their problem, and they were willing to pay for it. It's interesting, I didn't know this before, so immediately tell Zebedum. Apparently the one with the hole needed a specific type of ditch, just a type of dirt. In other words, Chazal telling us they both had a desire to destroy the Jews, but obviously for different reasons. One was represented by like a guy who had the mound on his field, and one was represented like the guy who needed the dirt to fill the hole in his field. Alright, so listen, so the Gemara says, they met up one day. Okay. So the guy who had the hole in his field said to the guy with the dirt, sell me your dirt. He said to him, take it for free. Halavai. Vayosra melchas stabata. That's the next piece. So from here you'd see who's who. Because Haman was the guy who offered to pay Achashverosh to kill the Jews. So he's the guy who said, I'll give you money to buy your mound. So Haman was the guy with the hole in his field. And Achashverosh says, HaKesef Nosel Loch, keep the money. Va'am Lasos Bo Katov V'necha, do whatever you want with them. So we can tell from the exchange who's who. Right? So who's who? Achashverosh was the guy who had the mound on his field. He was wishing someone would take it. Haman was the guy who had the hole in his field, and he was wishing somebody would give him that mound to fill it. So what is each one? How does the Gemara, what's the representation of each one's motivation to kill the Jews? That's explained by way of Marshall as the guy with the mound and the guy with the ditch. Now you can spin your drushes. Go ahead. Now, in terms of the marshal, so we're saying Achash, they both is representing two paradigms of anti-Semitism, okay, and one of them is the Jew as an impediment to something, right? It's like it says, Achashverosh would love to use his property, but there's something blocking him. There's something in his way. That's one type of a just derech marshal. The other one is that the person starts out with a deficit, and somehow the destruction of the Jew he feels will complete him. Right? The mound was the Jew, right? Now in the story, the mound was the Jews. So somehow the Jews were like an impediment to Achashverosh's desires. But their destruction, which is in the Derech Moshel of putting them into the hole, would complete Haman's ability to enjoy himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in other words, Achashverosh is the person who wants to live the life of hedonism. Right? That was him. Look, the guy knew how to throw a party, right? So, So he wanted to live the life of Taiva. But what is the problem with living the life of Taiva? The problem is... What's that?
The super ego?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the problem is that nobody really wants to just live the life of pleasure. You have to have a certain human satisfaction that you're living the right life. You know, I mean, there's pleasure is just a sensory experience, but you have to have satisfaction that with your life. So satisfaction means that you have to feel psychologically that you're involved in the good. That's the problem. Nobody can get away from the good with the capital G. You know, what is it? So the hedonist has to deny that there's something beyond pleasure that is, part of man's existence. So when he's trying to enjoy himself, and he sees the Jew that represents to him this idea that there's something beyond pure pleasure, that there's something greater for man, and that man is unfulfilled unless he's involved in a higher type of life, it stops him from fully being able to enjoy his hedonism. So it creates some guilt or some sort of doubt of this. You know, I mean, when a person is trying to be a lazy guy and he sees an industrious worker, it just is annoying, you know. Mm-hmm. It brings to mind something you're trying to just ignore. Because the truth of the matter is, deep down, they know that they're lacking something. They know that deep down, they know that there's more, right? They know there's more. And
but he's trying to deny it.
He's trying to deny it. He's trying to keep chasing pleasure. And, it's a funny thing. Coincidentally, I'm learning with the girls. They were interested in Agatha, so I was doing this, The Juggler and the King.
You've heard of it.
Yoni, you would love this.
Yeah.
You read it?
Yeah, it's part 2.
So the first one has the same idea.
What exactly
is that? Oh, so the book is supposed to be the Gra had a commentary on Agatha.
Mm-hmm.
On the really wild, wild Agathas. Yeah, but like on the really, really crazy sounding ones.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, Aaron Feldman, sort of, made it more understandable. You know, he fleshed it out because the Gra is very cryptic.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not translating the Gra literally in any sense, but he's taking the basic ideas and really giving it a full exposition. So he has over here Horman, the son of Lilith, running on the battlements of the city wall of Mechuzah. A cavalryman below, riding on a horse, could not keep up with him. Once two mules were saddled by Horman and stood on the two sides of the river Donag, he jumped from one mule to the other while holding two cups of wine in his hands, pouring from one to the other without a drop falling to the earth. Pleasure, right? So the point is, he says that, Horman represents like the guy who's trying to live just a pure life of type. But he has to keep busy because it always creeps in his mind that he's not really fully living a satisfactory life. That there's some deeper meaning to life. And since we have that, it really always bubbles up in some way. So the Achashverosh type hates the Jew because he represents to him, the antithesis that the hedonism is not complete. So he just wishes he didn't see that guy. Just wishes like the Jew wasn't around, But the Haman is the different prototype. He's like the Nazi prototype. They want to feel that they're the super race, right? But when they see the Jew, the existence of the Jew makes them realize that they're lacking something in themselves. That they're not really the super race. And the Jew, really, the existence of the Jew reveals a deep deficiency in themselves. The presence of the Jew reveals the deficiency in themselves. So that's what he says, Mitin tel zeh, he needed that one. The guy who is the anti-Semite because he wants to feel the superiority, when he knows he doesn't really have it, because he knows that he sees from history and from he sees from history that the Jew really is are the people that have what he wishes to have. So that really, he can't be complete with the Jew. The destruction of the Jew, he feels, will prove that he really is the one.
Why doesn't he just become Jewish? I mean, if they're so honest, they know that they're a better
race,
right?
See, it's an interesting thing. It's a racial thing. Because race is like an inherent thing. You can't become another race. Race is an inherent thing. What is the mark of the egomaniac? Is that they want to feel that from birth, from themselves, intrinsically, some type of a superiority.
Uh-huh.
Once you say you're going to become a Jew, that already undermines the whole egomania. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. It's telling in the story that they both had the problem, but Haman was the one who proposed the solution. Because the hedonist is not... the hedonist is more of a laid-back, lazy kind of guy. Haman is the one who's driving, and it's burning him. To him, to the hedonist, it's like it's an annoyance. But to the Haman, it undermines his entire existence.
It's weird.
It's like if a guy wants to be known to be great at something, that's really what people they want, to be known to be great at something. And then the presence of the authentic one drives him crazy. A guy wants to be known as the greatest something. It drives him crazy to see the guy who really truly has that. It just reveals his deficiency. It shows the dissonance in his fantasy and in the reality. And that causes great anger. I mean, that drives people to kill.
Why is Achashverosh...
Cain and Hevel. Similar kind of a thing.
Why doesn't he have thought...
Oh, it's a good question. Did Achashverosh change in the end?
Get a new wife.
It's a good question. Okay. Yeah, I think the Gemara... I saw a Gemara. I think it said that when they... Right, when... This is a good riot to Yonah, because it says when Haman came to Achashverosh, Balaila Ahu, on that night, and Achashverosh proposed dressing, parading Mordechai through town with all the covered, the high honors of the state. The Gemara says it wasn't really that Achashverosh liked Mordechai; he was angry at Haman. He knew it was killing him.
Really?
Yeah. He was trying to get back at Haman. That's the egomaniac. Haman couldn't even perceive the possibility that somebody else was going to be given this honor. It says, Haman said to himself, "Who else but me would be roy for such an honor? So let me tell you the whole thing. I want it like this, this, this. Great. Do that too." And Haman is, waiting. Mordechai Edi. Boom. Straight down to the floor. But it's amazing how he had the fortitude to do it.
Yeah.
He couldn't help it. I mean, he had to do it. And right. then there's a very funny Gemara about that. Yeah. There's a very funny Gemara about that also. That it says that Esther, Mordechai said, "I can't go until I shave and shower," you know. And it says Esther closed all the barbershops and bathhouses in Shushan, so that Haman had to do it himself.
Wow.
And then something like when Haman was bending down to pick up Mordechai on the horse, like Mordechai kicked him. Like, he really just, like, kept knocking him down.
Wow. Doesn't even kill himself.
Yeah. Just to clarify it, Achashverosh is living the life of the hedonist, but it's not satisfying to him because of the Jew. But Haman is not to himself, does not to himself feel superior when he sees Mordechai. He can't live the life of the superior race with the Jew there. It represents a deficiency in his ability to view himself that way. As the Gemara says that Haman used to wear on his neck
an idol.
Something that said all of his wealth. Like he would always he wanted to show it. He was a type that's that kind of a person, you know. He intrinsically doesn't. He's trying to make himself like something that he's not. Gemara says that he was a guy who ran to the head. He was in the beginning. He says there were seven officers, and Mimuchan was the last one. And he was the one who proposed the idea to kill Vashti. And the Gemara says that was really Haman. Mm-hmm. Even though he was the smallest one, he rushed ahead with the answer. He was like an ambitious. Ambition. What's ambition? Ambition is the type of thing where you...
Isn't it a good thing?
Is it a good thing? Well...
If it's properly...
You were about to say what it was.
Right?
I interrupted you.
That's right. No, I mean, I think a guy, when you say a guy is very ambitious, in a certain sense, you're saying that he is... I mean, I think, when you say a person is ambitious, you mean to say that his dreams of himself really outpacing his ability, but he's ambitious. He's pushing himself ahead beyond what he really is.
So you're saying it's a bad thing?
I'm not fond of ambitious people, but no, I'm just kidding.
Like politicians are ambitious.
Ambitious, like, but what does they mean? They mean he's trying to be more than he is. It's a nice way of saying that.
Well, I mean, that's because he has a view of himself.
Exactly. A view of himself, and that's why ambitious people... Look, of course, you know, all words are used in many different ways, but there is a certain idea of a guy rushing into a situation he's not really prepared for, and chalking that up to ambition. Now, sometimes in America, the Americans cherish success. That's all we care about. So sometimes a guy is ambitious, he does a rash, stupid thing, and it works out. I don't know. Takes a crazy position on interest rates, and he walks out with $1 billion. So then we say, "Oh, ambition is good." And that's what they say. You know, oh, you see, you got to take the big chances. You know,
but you see, the other guys are.
It's not really a rational move. People,
not a rational move. So that's the type of thing. Like, ambition is sort of like you feel a way about yourself, and you want everyone else to believe it. So you rush to do things to, you know,
to impress them. Successful and wild.
That's right. People look at it as a good because if a person lacks any ambition at all, they call him lazy and he doesn't have any self-motivation. Right. So everyone, you can't do anything unless you're self-motivated. So ambitious is you're, you know, totally motivated. But it's based on a total fantasy. But there is a... That's what the Rambam says. Rambam says where is it? I think it's in Shmarta Prakam. Rambam says you have to be careful about the way people, you know, look at midos. He says sometimes people take a flaw and they make it into a mila. He says they'll say the person is lazy. So people say, oh, he's a someech b'chalko. Guy hasn't done a thing in 10 years.
He's a politician.
Right? Oh, that is this on the says no. You got to differentiate between the guy who's not running after fantasies because he recognizes what things are. He's a mechlechalko, and the guy who just is lacking, who has a flaw in himself that he can't do even what should be done. And you can't say a lazy guy is a mechlechalko. So here too, they say an ambitious guy is someone who really is has a high quality of motivation, but it's not. It's just on the face of it, people mistake, you know, what's real and what's counterfeit. That's an old story. I mean, it's exactly like the Nazis. I mean, because the question, I think Freud had, he mentioned that. He says they called it the final solution. It's also linked in with Christianity. They call it the final solution, right? So he said, well, what was the question? What was the problem? The Christians have this too. They feel that the presence of the Jew is a kasha on their whole religion. That's the question. The question is...
What's the question?
Right, because the question is, I think it's from the Christians, really. If Jesus really was the Messiah, so then why are the Jews still around? If God switched who the Jews are, so then why are the Jews still around? There's a, you know... vibrant entity should have been taken from the Jews, given to the Christians, and the Jews should be gone. So the presence of the Jew is a question. It's a problem to their theology. That's why they believe that Jesus will, that's why their biggest thing is to convert a Jew. They believe when the Jews are all converted, then Jesus will come. something like that, whatever. Yeah. So, but the bottom line is the same thing. If a person wants to believe something about themselves, and the Jew represents the question, then that means that the presence of the Jew represents a deficient, like a hole in your plan. The Jew is like represents a big hole in your plan. So that's why I said, you give me this mound, I'll fill it in. They think that it's true because they, in other words, in their mind, they're saying, look, the Jew's presence is the kasha on my whole thing. So if I can remove him, then I have proven that I'm better.
So we'll get rid of that. Slightly.
It's a good question. But we're saying like this.
No, but the fantasy it's a fantasy
in your mind, and in your mind, this is the solution. So well, then, if you can stay in your fantasy, will you be happy? Ahasuerus is worse off than Haman, because Ahasuerus was trying to deny a whole element of his psyche. And that'll never work. That'll never work. You can get rid of the Jews. You can get rid of something that reminds you of it, but when you sleep at night, it's gonna come in. But if Haman could actually remove the Jews, there would be, in that system, he would be the top dog. So until someone else came up, he would be very happy.